Was he on the, he wasn't on the floor.
Who?
Widener.
Widener?
He's around.
Yeah.
Is he today?
He wasn't on the floor. I think he's gone today. You know what I mean. You got a few of those.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm opening a meeting of the House Energy Environment Committee for Thursday, March 12th already, yes, 2015. So, committee, we're going to start off today with the work sessions that are posted. These are bills that were sent to this committee but would probably best be addressed in another committee. So I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bills 3360, 3361, and 3362.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3360, 3361, 3362 without recommendation back to the Speaker for re-referral to another committee, which is the House Committee on Ag and Natural Resources. And I just wanted to add, there's quite a history.
We'll do discussion in just a second.
Later?
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Reardon moves House Bill 3360, House Bill 3361, and House Bill 3362 without recommendation back to the Speaker for re-referral to the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Is there discussion?
Yes, I would.
Yes.
Explanation. It's no offense to this committee. It's just the other committee has a long history with these bills, and we've presented this information probably three times to that committee, and it does affect a lot of the agricultural community. So it seemed very appropriate that they would deal with it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Representative Reardon. As much as we probably would have enjoyed learning more about them, we appreciate the work that you've done, and I think that's a great committee for them to, since they're familiar with the subject matter. Is there any other discussion? Further discussion? Okay. Any objection? If not, the motion passes.
And I would be happy to share with this committee sometime.
There's always the deadline. The past the deadline is. Okay, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the work sessions on House Bill 3360, 3361, and 3362, and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 456. Beth, can you provide the committee with a little information about this bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 456 would clarify that natural gas utilities may receive additional incentives for projects approved by the PUC under the Voluntary Emission Reduction Program. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay, and I will note that this bill comes to us from the Senate, and it looks like it passed fairly broadly, with fairly broad support. Okay, so for this, I'd like to call up Gary Bauer and Jeff Bissonnette. Good afternoon. Go ahead and get started when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair Peterson, Vega Peterson, members of the committee. I'm Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. Quick background on this piece of legislation is it's a clarifying piece. Last session, the body passed a bill that incented natural gas utilities to reduce emissions. It was put in, developed by the Public Utility Commission, Senator Beyer, Senator Starr, and a work group. The bill states that its purpose is to incent this. However, during the rulemaking process, at the very end of it, it was pointed out that the words incent weren't in the same sentences that talked about cost how you would deal with the costs. And so what the bill simply does is make it clear that incentives are possible. I'll give you an example in terms. Normally, utilities recover costs of an activity, or they can earn a return on a capital investment. In this process, we've talked about incentives based more around the actual reduction of emissions. So again, this just clarifies it. The rules have been adopted. Everything's kind of ready to go. I just want to kind of wrap this up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeff Bissonnette with the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, representing residential ratepayers. Pretty much what he said. We're doing what we thought we did last session. We're part of the bill. We're part of the rulemaking. Have agreed upon rules. Are actively pursuing and looking at projects, but need this clarification to make sure that we could do what we all thought we could do, and would urge your support of Senate Bill 456.
Thank you. I do notice that in the bill, the words incentive is like liberally sprinkled throughout the bill at this point, so I think we'll make sure that it is covered in this version of the bill. Is there any questions for this panel from the committee? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gary, could you just give us some real-life examples of what an additional incentive would be so that we could visualize what that is and why you would need to recoup those costs?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson. Yes, the what's been discussed currently is actually taking into account not just whatever the cost might be or earning on that capital, but measuring your success in part on actual reduction of emissions. And so you would be incented based on the emissions reductions, for example. An example of one of the projects we're looking at, when you work on a natural gas line, there is natural gas in it, so there's methane. And currently that gets just basically vented to the atmosphere. Things we are looking at is how you might be able to capture that and reinsert it back in the line, for example. And so it'd be based on the cost recovery in part would be based on how much can you capture and how can you reduce that. I don't know if that helps you or not. But
yeah, it helps.
And Madam Chair, I'll just say that in addition to the greenhouse gas reduction, the projects also have to demonstrate an additional consumer benefit, and can't do something that the company would already be doing or should already be doing. And so there's a couple of safeguards in there, and so it makes it possible to say that, you know, the sky is not the limit, but it still has kind of given rise to some pretty interesting possibilities to both, again, bring benefits to customers and reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Okay. Thank you both. Is there anyone else here who would like to? Yeah, he's on the next bill.
Oh.
Yeah, thank you. Anybody else here who'd like to testify on Senate Bill 456? Okay. Committee, this is a pretty straightforward change. I do have it posted for a work session for Tuesday, so if you have any issues that you want to talk about, please let's do it beforehand. Okay, thank you. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 456 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2833. Beth, can you go ahead and provide the committee with a summary of this bill, too?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2833 would add woody biomass as a fuel for space, water heating, or combined heat and power systems to the types of green energy technology that for which the agency must set aside 1.5% of the contract price to include in public buildings. There's no revenue impact, and the fiscal statement has not been done.
Okay, excellent. And we have Representative Witt here today to talk a little bit about this bill. Representative Witt, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Brad Witt, State Representative from House District 31, appearing before you this afternoon, in support of House Bill 2833. It's a fairly simple bill that adds woody biomass to that complex of fuel sources that must be considered for heating or power systems when public buildings are either constructed, reconstructed, or renovated. The bill hopefully will be a win-win-win for forest health, for local employment, and hopefully price competitive power, and good lessons to be learned by some of the schools around the state that have been using woody biomass, and I know that the folks in Vernonia have been very pleased with the system that they have used there when they rebuilt or built their new school system, which is woody biomass. So with that, very straightforward. Would be happy to try and answer any questions that members of the committee might have.
Okay. Thank you. Are there Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, thank you. Appreciate your work on this. Question, would this cover woody biomass that might be converted into pellets and burned in that fashion? I ask that because we've got a situation in our school district where we were contemplating converting the heat from a ancient oil furnace into something that could convert biomass, but there's been some discussion about that, but sometimes there can be difficulty on acquiring pellets or converting them, or there also are thoughts about setting up portable pellet machines up in the woods closer to the source of the biomass and actually do the production up there. But I just wondered if you knew whether that would fit into this criteria that you're outlining in here in the bill.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Johnson, I don't know whether pellets fit within the definition of woody biomass, mm-hmm. and I was trying to find that definition here, and it doesn't jump out at me, mm-hmm. and so I am really unclear whether that would fit within the definition of woody biomass. Okay. I'm just not clear.
Okay.
That might be something we can ask the agency for clarity on, if there's a definition of that. I don't see anybody here. So, other questions for Representative Witt? Thank you so much for your testimony today.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Appreciate it.
Next up, I'd like to call Doug Riggs and Bill Cluding.
Like the stoves.
Exactly.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs on behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization. I'll be brief. We still testified in support of this bill last session, and we are very supportive of the concept. My cities have been a leader in green technology in Central Oregon. They've also been a key participant in the efforts to clear unnecessary and dense forests in Central Oregon, which lead to forest fires. So we really view this bill as a win-win. So we are here to lend our support and hope that we can get something like this moving this session. Thank you.
Thank you. go ahead.
Madam Chair, committee for the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. Thank you for hearing 2833 today. 2833 is a simple bill. It's not a mandate, but it's a key to creating jobs, cleaning the environment, and just making a more efficient way to heat and power our public buildings. As you can see on the front page of this handout, the bottom corner is the units, facilities that are already using woody biomass. Notice the smaller brown circles are already public buildings, schools, hospitals, government offices, and they're all heated by woody biomass. Page 2 is just a fact sheet of woody biomass types, where it's at, the power transmission lines. The key is page 3 that shows the map of Oregon, and you might ask, where are we going to get this woody biomass? And as you can see by these hexagons, I apologize for the small print, but on the back of this sheet is a little bit more visible numbers. But the key to this is the darker green, the 160,000 acres, that's 1 million bone dry ton of woody biomass that can be removed. And that is still leaving the viable, healthy timber. This is just the dead, dying, on the ground timber. As you can see, rural Oregon, Eastern Oregon, Central Oregon has a problem. This is one bill that can help clean up these forests, clean in the environment, help wildlife. If any of you folks have ever walked through one of these forests, you see very little wildlife. You see no elk, you see no deer, you see, there's nothing in there for them except these dead trees. If we can go in there and clean these out, open up the meadows, your wildlife is going to thrive. And again, I can't emphasize how many jobs that this is going to create. And if one thing rural Oregon needs is jobs. Touch a little bit on fire. The last page I put together quite a few years ago, and it tells, I used the biscuit fire for an example of how much emissions goes up in the air from a forest fire. And you can see by the scientific studies that was done, it's all documented. And people just don't realize how many tons of poison gases goes up in the air. Small particles that people can breathe and stay in your lungs. And you hear more and more about the cycle that we're going into. There's no snowpack this year. We're drying out already. And we're going to have major, major problems. Granted, this won't clean our forest up right now, but it's a gradual step. My goal is to help these facilities lower their costs. One school lowered their heating bill 50% by putting in a biomass. Even the EPA now, the EPA, with the emission controls we have, states that woody biomass is carbon neutral. And again, I'll bring up the term jobs. We have people in this state that build these units. They build the emission controls. DEQ and the Department of Energy will work with these people that plan on putting in additional facilities. In fact, Southern Oregon right now today is in the final stages of putting their woody biomass plant together. They're this close to putting one in. I can't say enough of the importance of trying to get our forest back in line. We're 40 years behind. And hopefully this is one small step in that direction. I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel, Representative Vence.
No, thank you, Chair. The question I have, you've heard me ask it, I think, before in this committee, and I think, Bill, you alluded to it, is the impact that the removal of the biomass has positively on our forests. And in previous conversations with folks who have these plants, the question has been, is there a benefit accruing to society in general that they're not paying for? This bill will help alleviate that concern on my part. That's why I ask, Rob Ferreras of Ferreras Lumber and Valerie Johnson of D.R. Johnson's company to come back to this committee with a list of all of the good things that accrue. And this has a bunch of those good things on it. What would be helpful, of course, is a list showing who is benefiting from a lot of these things and how much are they paying for that benefit. Because one might ask, why do we add this to this 1.5% requirement? And the answer, of course, would be because society as a whole is not paying necessarily for those benefits that are accruing to it. So having said all that, do you think, is there a source of money flowing into these folks that are removing this biomass from those who are benefiting, shall we say, ecologically from this from their efforts that I'm just not aware of? Is there a big pile of money flowing in from all of those who really, really, really enjoy the recreational activities out there?
Chair, Representative Bentz, I can tell you that right now Canada is a big money business for Canada, making pellets out of woody biomass and shipping it to South Korea, Japan, and China. The southeastern states are doing the same thing. Oregon could be at the forefront of this. I can visualize small companies making a pretty good living making pellets. We got these portable pellet units. Mm-hmm. We could truck this stuff to Astoria, get it on the ships, and return money to Oregon. That's my goal. I've set high goals. But like I said, Madam Chair, Committee, we're 40 years behind. And it's time we step forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Bentz, I think you've asked a very good question. All of us who recreate in Oregon's forests or the national forests and pay campground fees or hunting fees, et cetera, help to pay for some level of maintenance of those facilities, forest or what have you. I think the real benefit here is there's a requirement that a public building spend 1.5% already on these technologies. Adding woody biomass into that equation helps create a market and creates a demand for woody biomass that will lead the developers of the buildings to invest in those technologies. So I think the goal of this bill is to create the kind of a market that is, I won't say entirely self-sustaining, but at least helps get it off the ground. And I'd like to allude to something that was mentioned a few minutes ago, which is, you know, I grew up in Redmond, and when I grew up in Redmond, there were 5 operating mills in my small town. There's a half a mill, basically, right now. And so this is an opportunity, again, for well-paying jobs, good-paying jobs in, you know, rural Oregon, central Oregon, et cetera, to be able to be created, not necessarily with a direct public tax benefit, but with an incentive designed to, again, help create a market for this kind of product, which I think is very important. Another very good point that was made earlier is if you look at the snowpack levels, cyclical, we're way down this year. Having lived through forest fires in the Santa Ana Pass area over the last 4 or 5 years, you can only imagine what we're going to see this summer. And so there has been some clearing around places like Black Butte, but hopefully this would lead to thinning of forests that are in desperate need of attention. So I'm not sure I answered your question fully.
Madam Chair.
Follow up.
All right. So both of you are pretty close, but my point is that society as a whole benefits from having these forests, and currently society as a whole is not necessarily paying for this type of work. It just isn't. The source of funding for removal of this biomass is the power that it will generate when they haul it out of the woods, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. So how do we get this work done, and who pays for the benefit that accrues to all of us? The short answer is this bill, maybe a little bit. Mm-hmm. The longer answer is nobody's paying, and that's why it's not happening.
Right.
So to me, this is a very, very modest step in the correct direction. And I'm reminded now of the fact that the state of Oregon is picking up the tab for fire suppression that the Forest Service should be paying, or treatment, excuse me, because the Forest Service is spending all of its money fighting fires. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, we would all be the better for investing more for the good that's accruing. And so I'm very happy for this little bill that does a modest amount in going in the direction you guys have suggested.
Right.
But I think it's just an extremely small step for the benefit that accrues from the activity that biomass removal is.
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Bentz, there's a little bit of pay me a little now or pay me a lot later, and that's the problem with forest fires. We know that the cost of fighting a forest fire is astronomically higher than the cost of incentivizing a program like this. You know, we ran through our entire forest fighting budget last summer. I anticipate we'll probably do the same thing again this year. And then the ecological costs of the carbon emissions in a forest fire are also pretty dramatic. So I see your point.
Thank you.
Representative Holby.
I appreciate that. I was wondering if you can tell me what, as this bill would, if this was woody biomass was considered green technology, and what's your projection on what percentage of woody biomass this bill will remove from our forests? How many bone dry tons will this really take off the forests? How many jobs, you mentioned this will create jobs, how many jobs will this actually create for the woody biomass industry and how many jobs will be displaced in the solar industry because this will be in direct competition with a solar program as opposed to creating a new program for woody biomass. It was my sort of one of my objections to this concept is you're taking a new definition or including a new definition into green technology, which includes a source of energy that has a lot of emissions and, you know, trucking and transportation and a lot of things that are going to have impacts in some areas that do have, air quality issues already. And so, you know, I have to, going back to Representative Bentz, you have to weigh the value of what this is actually creating versus the value you're going to be displacing instead of creating, a new program for woody biomass, which I totally support. But I have a lot of questions about bringing this into the 1.5% program, which was totally directed to a different type of energy. It's not about renewable energies. It was about emission-free energy, which, So anyway, I just want to know how, if you've done the numbers, what your projections are for actually the amount of woody biomass that will be used up and how that's going to really impact forest health. It seems like it's a pretty small thing. I think we need a much larger scale approach to woody biomass in our forests than these very small incremental pieces. So I'm just kind of trying to figure out what are those figures.
Chair, Representative Holt, you made some good points there. Solar panels are going to have their place. This is not a mandate. This allows the contractor of the building to sit down with DEQ and Department of Energy and figure out if this is the proper place. Granted, there is places where woody biomass would not be a viable area, but there again, there's places that absolutely don't want solar panels, period. There'll always be a market for solar panels, but this creates a whole new job market. As far as estimating, I would say, in fact, in previous testimony in the past 10 years, when we was working on these cogen plants, we had it figured out it'd take 50 people, 40 in the woods, and 10 running the cogen facility 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And these were all high-paying jobs, especially the ones that worked right on the cogen itself. And they have ratios figured out what one job in rural Oregon accounts for quite a large number of jobs in Portland. If you lose one job in rural Oregon, it's like losing a vast, big number in Portland. We need to create these jobs in rural Oregon. I just got this today, and I'll get a copy to each one of you. And it shows. I've got this studied somewhat, but it actually shows the life cycle greenhouse gas emissions from all the power sources we have in this state. And as you can see, woody biomass, photovoltaics, solar panel, amazingly, they're all three about the same when it comes to impact and carbon emissions, amazingly. Of course, over here is your coal, oil, natural gas. But this study's been going on for 4 years now, and I'll make sure I'll get this in color, but I want to give this to all of you. But it actually shows the ratio of exactly, it's almost parallel. When you study the true cycle of what it takes to make a solar panel and what it takes to get woody biomass out of the woods. Again, just another little thought, a bill like this, if we're going to do anything in our forest, Madam Chair, committee, hopefully we can pass 2449 also. That's the tax credit for hauling woody biomass. I urge this committee to pass 2449, and I urge the committee to pass House Bill 2833. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Representative Rudin.
I just had a question I should know the answer to. Does this give you, do you have access to all forest in the state?
Pardon?
Do you have access to all forest in the state, both state forest and federal?
It's amazing that the amount of acreage that the federal forest agencies allow for this type of cleanup.
Okay.
Very large. In fact, the last one was almost 100,000 acres. When they see the need, we're even working with the federal folks. We're putting the planning out. We're putting the crews in there, and it's working. But you'd be amazed and shocked to see how much is just piled up and let set. Even when it's sitting there, it's putting carbon in the air when it rots. And they only let it set so long, and then they burn it. And we all know we got areas in this state that can't tolerate smoke, a lot of smoke, when there's a downdraft.
Okay.
We see it in the papers all the time. And again, I'd rather see us utilize this stuff and wind up with jobs in a healthy forest. Thank you.
Oh, yep. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill, I wonder what you might know about the technology that could be going into the creation or design of portable pellet manufacturing plants. Because in a lot of areas where if you have a critical mass of woody biomass available, I would think it would be more cost effective to actually haul that a much shorter distance, convert it into a fuel that's burnable, rather than trucking that stuff down those long hauls for a long distance. But can you talk to that about that in terms of what kind of technology or interest there might be in creating more of these, especially if we get larger masses of woody biomass available to work with?
The technology is closer and closer, sir. In fact, we even have units now, instead of the pellet, they make an actual brick. It's probably 4 inches wide, inch and a half thick, probably 5 inches long. And those really burn good. They burn hot. Mm-hmm. They burn clean after it comes out of our scrubbers and emissions. Yes, the technology's there.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you both so much for all the information that you've provided today. Thank you for...
I will get this copy.
Excellent. Next, we're going to call up Jeff Bissonnette and Chet Zimmer. And we've got multimedia. Please go ahead whenever you're ready.
Madam Chair Vega Peterson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chet Zimmer. I'm representing OSEA, the Oregon Solar Energy Industries Association. We're in opposition to the proposed changes to the 1.5% green technologies for public buildings law. So first, let's talk about the benefits of the original statute that's in place now. It has been effective at creating living wage jobs for Oregon families, and an expansion to woody biomass would come at the expense of solar industry and our employees. The statute, as it currently stands, is clear and direct. Public agencies can focus their resources on one clean technology, and in a couple areas, they can also consider geothermal in their analysis. Thanks. It currently promotes a technology with a free fuel source, and it emits no carbon. In addition to installation jobs, the original statute also creates and sustains local manufacturing jobs such as Solar World in Hillsboro. And finally, there's important cross-pollination going on in solar. Solar knowledge is being shared from solar-specific installation companies and contractors with general contractors who are working on a lot of these public building projects. An expanded statute would directly reduce the number of solar industry projects out there. It would promote projects with less desirable sustainability scorecards. And biomass relies upon localized fuel sources, which can be limited at times by harvest restrictions or other factors. We've already come so far. Our legislature and public agencies have worked diligently alongside the private sector to chart a course towards a strong and sustainable solar industry in the state. And effectively, we've created a model of excellence for public-private partnerships. I think also consideration should be given to the fact that the growth of solar globally is important to us here in Oregon locally. We have a modest but dedicated group of solar professionals here in Oregon, many of which are considered experts in the industry. And these are the seeds for future job growth, as renewable opportunities of the future are going to dwarf what we see as far as solar in the state today. Here's a couple projects that our specific company has worked on. Down at the ODVA, or Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs in Lebanon, is an 85-kilowatt project spanning 11 buildings on their 12-acre campus, providing 93,000 kilowatt hours of energy annually, and this was installed in 2014. A roughly 60-kilowatt project on the Warm Springs Elementary School in Warm Springs, Oregon, producing approximately 81,000 kilowatt hours of energy annually, which saves the school about $5,000 on their electricity bill. It also, you know, provides an opportunity for education benefits at the school, and it's inspired Jefferson County to add solar and renewable energy to their curriculum as well. Here's a project on ODFW, a 20-kilowatt project producing approximately 21,000 kilowatt hours annually. And finally, a project in Bend on the Centennial Parking Garage, roughly 33 kilowatts, producing 40,000 kilowatt hours of electricity annually. Solar installers in Oregon cannot afford another hit to the programs that support a growing industry and living wage jobs. Globally, solar is growing, and it's important for us to sustain the momentum that we've carried to this point. This graph shows the dip in commercial solar projects in the last 3 or 4 years, and we see that today. This is a small but important piece of solar incentive programs out there that provide projects, commercial scale projects. Certainly residential is moving along well in the state, but commercial projects are sort of few and far between currently, and we hope to change that. And the 1.5% mandate certainly is helping right now. So solar is clean, it's free, a free fuel source that's sustainable, and it's ideal in terms of it being a distributed energy technology. So you can put it on a building and produce energy there that's used on site. There's no transportation costs associated with it. And we think that the 1.5% rule, it's important to keep it as it currently stands for the benefit of Oregon and our public buildings across the state. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, Jeff Bissonnette with the Citizens Utility Board, representing residential ratepayers. Check neutral on this bill, and usually when you're neutral you don't get up and testify, but I guess I wanted to just give some perspective. I was involved in 2005 when the first 1.5% for solar was proposed. We actually passed the legislation in 2007, and it seems like 1.5% has sort of been a battle cry for a lot of folks since then. And, you know, I have to say I'm sympathetic to the arguments that are made by the biomass representatives, because those were the same arguments that we made on solar. And I think they're both true. And I think that there's things that recommend solar, there's things that recommend woody biomass. And so I'm not a forest policy expert, although I hear from, people on all sides of the forest issue that the forests are a mess, and so I'm inclined to believe that. But I am, I do know a little something about energy, and I guess the thing that concerns me, not with this bill in particular, but just around this policy, is how much we're kind of trying to have it do, and I'm not sure it has the horsepower to do it. I think 1.5% when it was first introduced was seen as a shot in the arm to solar. It didn't solve all of solar's issues, didn't build an entire solar industry, but I think has been helpful. And so I guess I posit the same thing here for the woody biomass industry is, is this enough to start building a market? And if 1.5% is, I'm wondering, and 1.5% is still valuable for solar, I'm wondering if slicing the same pie in smaller pieces is the way to go, or if increasing the size of the pie a little bit is to make sure that that we do what we're trying to do and really determine what we're trying to do. Are we trying to have a good and balanced energy policy? Are we trying to have a good and balanced environmental policy? Is it an economic development policy? Is it all three? And I think that, and I'm not here to say what the answer is, but I think that whatever the answer is, it's probably different and maybe better than trying to jam something else into 1.5%. Because at some point, then 1.5% doesn't do enough for anybody. And so I guess I just offer that to you as food for thought, and happy to be part of the discussion. And I do think that, because you deal with both energy and environment, as the title of this committee, but also deal a lot with sort of the economic impacts, this is the place to kind of figure that out, weigh it out, and figure out a policy that works well for solar, works well for geothermal, I think we have that, and works well for biomass. And if we can figure out a good and better way to do that, I'd be all for that, and I'd sign up as a supporter of that bill. So with that, I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have to come down on the side that of wishing that we would, nothing is going to stop people from making more than the 1.5%. But I would like to see us do more with sort of a variety of renewables on buildings. And forever working on emergency preparedness and resilience projects. So I look to the resources that we have on our side of the Coast Range Mountains and in our rural areas. Don't want to leave these guys out. There's nothing wrong with putting wind, solar, biomass, geothermal, you name it, on a building or on a home or on a, whatever, but this is for public buildings, I get that. We're kind of behind in the world on this. There are many, many places where there are much bigger installations and will create a little bit bigger footprint. And this is something we're always trying to help our rural areas because they're consistently behind some of the rest of the state. This is something that they could do. The biomass, right now we are facing a very, very serious upcoming fire season, even if it rains, but it's because of the snowfall, and don't want to get into that with my East Side boys over there. But we are going to have some serious fire issues, and this is something that can continually work on getting some of this stuff out of the woods. And utilizing it as such, and I did have a biomass business in my district, but I don't think they're doing that anymore because of whatever restrictions happened where they sold it. But I'm sure that if they had this, you know, carrot out there for them, they could, that would be something that they could help supply. And I know that Representative Witt mentioned Vernonia School, but that, I mean, he didn't really flesh it out. And if you haven't been there and seen that, that's an amazing building. And utilized, got rid of whatever they were burning in their boiler, and they put in a biomass heating system and energy. They're pretty much self-contained, and they are the go-to evac center for any disaster, most of which in that area has been floods in the past. But you know, they, when the Cascadia one hits, they'll be the go-to place there. And they utilize the woods. They worked with the timber industry. They have a program there that they, you know, it's just kind of this symbiotic thing going on, and I wish Rep Witt would come up and tell us more about it, because he knows it better than I do. But this is the kind of projects that we should be doing. And so, and I, that's getting back to the 1.5%. It's not a lot, it's something, but we could be doing even better with that. And so adding to the solar, there's, I mean, I'm all for more solar too, but it's not as constant as some of these other methods. So got to have a mix, you know, in my humble opinion. So I support the bill. If you did.
Thank you.
Just so you know.
I knew there was a information in there somewhere.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Chair. I was just looking at one of the articles here on photovoltaics, and it's suggesting that they are now competitive under certain studies with natural gas. Kind of interesting. And so if we look at the long-term policy underlying what we did, it looks like we may want to declare victory when it comes to solar, and say that maybe we better focus on other things. But there's a bigger question here than just the success of the underlying manufacturing of the energy generating device. And that bigger question is, what were we trying to do to begin with? Was it to promote clean energy, which I think it was, and then to help an energy-generating thing, photovoltaic, make it? And I think that was a secondary issue. So if the primary issue is to clean up the environment, then I would suggest that the biomass wins hands down in this state, particularly given if you measure each one of these levels of analysis, it truly wins. First, because it's cleaning up a mess that otherwise might burn up, and thus you get to count that. And secondly, because it's generating long-term benefit in the form of a forest that can better sequester carbon. So I'm thinking that when it comes to solar, we might want to move on. And I say might because I'm a big supporter of solar. I'm bringing the industrial solar bill. I mean, you guys all know that. And the numbers on that with the federal subsidy are around 8.3 cents. That's low. That's really low. And that gets us closer to suggesting that indeed solar has arrived. And thus, going back to the original concept and align the bill, like I said, probably time to maybe expand it. And that would be my argument on the policy level. You guys, I'm free to please comment.
I'll comment generally and let my colleague up here comment on the impacts of the solar industry in particular. But the bill, you know, was about solar, and it was part of an overall package in 2007 that was kind of headlined by the Renewable Portfolio Standard, Senate Bill 838. And then because we weren't going to allow any carve-outs, we weren't going to allow any multipliers the way other states had for any particular energy source, we put a few other things in there that help solar, that help some smaller resources. And so it really was a package, and this bill was particularly solar. And you know, in terms of declaring victories, solar prices have come down. and have come down substantially. I don't know the article that you're reading. I'd be interested in seeing that. Competitive with gas is, if we had had this conversation 5 years ago, I might say maybe. But gas is still really low at this point. I know we're having trouble figuring out efficiency programs that are typically win hands down, and because of the abnormally low cost of gas, we're trying to thread a bunch of needles there. And I'm pretty sure that, in fact, I know that solar is not part of that conversation. So those are just a couple of comments I'll have overall. I think we're making progress on solar, but it may be a little bit premature to declare victory.
Chair Vega Peterson and Representative Bentz, yeah, to add to that, I think while solar may have arrived more on a global scale, I don't think locally in Oregon it has quite arrived yet. In terms of a stable and sustainable industry, currently, I think if you look out there at the local solar installers that are supplying local jobs, there's still a lot of flux in terms of employment, seasonality, and things like that. While the 1.5% doesn't solve that, it still provides commercial jobs that tend to not have the same seasonality that, say, residential projects might. And having this professional base of solar expertise around will be critical when solar does arrive in Oregon, at least in our eyes, when it really takes off here and dwarfs what we have on the ground currently. And we need the people who are in place now to still be there in order to put in these large projects, utility scale, commercial scale, and things of that nature.
And I will add one other thing is that, this is dedicated to sort of public buildings that are in a small to mid-sized kind of commercial scale, and that's the area of the industry that really is struggling right now. The residential sector is doing pretty well. The large-scale sector is doing pretty well, but with the demise of the business energy tax credit, the small-scale commercial and mid-scale commercial definitely are struggling, and so this is sort of a part of keeping at least a lifeline out there.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
Yeah, the article is actually Ken Wells' article in Business Week, Solar Energy is Ready, and it was back in 2012. I think the situation has only, I think it's only evolved further over that period, last 3 years. But I thank you for your points.
Thanks.
Mr. Zimmer, I had a couple of questions about just if you have more specifics about the number of jobs or the number of projects that you were talking about. You have some good examples here, but just in terms of what the impact of the 1.5% has been for the industry.
Chair Vega Peterson, thank you for the question. I will get that information and follow up with you. I need to go through ODO to find those numbers and find exactly how many kilowatts and projects were installed in the last few years and how that correlates with jobs.
I think one of the things is we in this committee, we've already done a lot of public hearings on bills that had to do with tax credits, and tax credits specifically targeted to the renewables energy or energy efficiency or clean energy. We just had one, that looked at where we had a lot of people coming in talking about why we needed, more credit for the dry tonnage of woody biomass. And they spoke a lot about what we've heard some people speak about today in terms of not just the clean energy benefits, but also the environmental benefits of cleaning up our forests. And I think it's good to have this opportunity. So I thank Representative Witt for bringing this forward, because I think in the 10 years when this policy was first talked about, in those 10 years, just think of how many acres of forest have been burned up in the forest fires in our state because of forest practices. Some of those we don't have a lot of control over, and so I think it's good to have the conversation and look at the policies that we've done in the past and how they relate to policy decisions that we want to make today. And I think that in you know, your comments as well, Jeff, I think are good, because we do have to think about, you know, is this a clean energy policy? Is it a broader environmental policy? And we never have these conversations without talking about the economic development impacts, but those are some of the hardest numbers to get into context. So I welcome, you know, the discussion on this, and I think it's a really good conversation for us to have about this program and about this bill, and look forward to getting some more specifics about it. Representative Colby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the conversation. I think it's a good one, because I followed this subject matter for many years. And, you know, I really think there is, you know, a huge place for all of our renewables, but... And I might say that I really question, I guess, the economy of scale of public buildings and the 1.5% program, of what it really does for our force compared to the cogens that we spoke of. I find it hard to believe that this 1.5% program is actually going to be enough incentive to do cogens, which, you know, are the kind of scale that we're, you know, the projects that are popping up is the kind of scale we really need to clean up the forests, and making sure those are put in the right places. We need the larger scale woody biomass facilities to really do something that's going to have any sort of impact on our forests. So I would also point out that a lot of buildings, when they're being constructed, they design them, you know, with a heating source a lot of times, whereas solar is not. You know, some photovoltaic, you know, they're meant to supplement electricity generally, as opposed to being the main heating source for a building. I would argue that the woody biomass is probably is able to compete with other heating sources for buildings as it is, and as evidence that they're being installed already without the 1.5% program. And so I don't know, I'm still a little bit worried. I think it's interesting that Mr. Bissonnette's, you know, question about, well, why don't we increase the size of the pie somehow so that there's, you know, some other sorts of incentives for woody biomass, as opposed to taking a requirement away that's going to hurt another one of our clean energy sources. And it was originally, because it was emission-free, it wasn't going to cause any problems with air sheds in particular areas, and there was no transmission, you know, no transportation costs. It was site-specific. So I'm still struggling with this concept a little bit, and we'll keep thinking about it, because I think we do need to do something about woody biomass on a much larger scale than this particular bill would accomplish.
Okay, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair, today.
Not
speaker. Speaker yesterday. Well, I called lively speaker today, too. I was around when they put in the RPS, and they wouldn't allow biomass in that. Mm-hmm. And that was disappointing to me, and then also the arbitrary year of whatever. But those kinds of things have changed, and now we are embracing that as a resource. And also, you know, it's, if you want to go bigger on solar, you should go big. I mean, look at Bence's district. Right now, what do we have, 250 acres for a thing? We should be looking in terms of miles, square miles, because there are huge installations of solar for power around the world in different places. And I don't think that, from what I hear and what I've read about them, that they've caused a lot of huge problems. They're producing energy. They're picking up the sun. That's what it's for. It just seems like it's just in the 250 acres is a maglite mini in his district. You know, it's a, what do you have, 19 million acres? It's huge. And I just think that we should be going bigger, you know, like you mentioned, that the commercial scale. Now, that's jobs. That's a lot of jobs. You're talking about making those panels and producing that power. And it replaces the fossil fuels that people don't like. And I think it's the coming way that we're headed. It should be. And as far as biomass, there's plenty of fuel out there for this.
Just one comment.
Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Zimmer, I just wanted to make the comment that I think you're presentation is a little misleading when you characterize solar as free, because obviously the state has made a tremendous investment in that to incentivize it. And obviously, as the chair referred to, there's been an enormous amount of tax credits and so forth that have gone into incentivizing it with the hope of driving down the cost, which as Representative Ben just talking about, I think we've been pretty successful at that. So I just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, for these commercial projects, currently there is no state incentive that is feeding into it. It's simply if there's a public building, 1.5% for any project over $1 million is being dedicated to solar. So the current program, and if it was misleading, I apologize. It was more about the fuel source being free. So once you get the solar installed, you're not paying anything for the sunlight that's hitting them. And speaking to a couple of the other points, I think, too, the nice thing about solar is that it's modular, so it fits in well with this program. If you have a $2 million building and you need 1.5%, it's very easy to size a system to meet that 1.5% criteria. It also has the advantage of being a distributed energy, so you're putting it on site and you're using it right there. And I think we're all excited about utility-scale solar in Oregon, for sure, and I hope there's miles and miles of it in, you know, non-arable land and things like that. But on these public buildings, it's distributed, so it's right there. You're using the energy as it's being produced. There's no loss through a transmission line. There's no transportation of the energy to another place. So it's efficient in that way. So I just wanted to make that point.
Representative, I'm trying to keep quiet here, but I don't know why I feel like we're trying to pick winners and losers here, and I'm not sure we're in the best position to do that. I like the idea of having things be kind of technology neutral and let the folks that are out there choosing a technology that's appropriate for their region and within their budgets and let the market duke it out, because I don't know how we make that position right here. So I would just prefer to include everything that has included biomass, solar, whatever we can use.
All right. Thank you both very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else here who would like to testify on House Bill 2833? All right, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2833. And unless anyone else has something they want to talk about for the next 45 minutes, I will go ahead and close the meeting for the House Energy and Environment Committee.
When I said I want to be
Close the meeting for the House Energy and Environment.